You might have heard that before, and it's because we had quite a few people asking about this tune. I've Got Ramblin' on My Mind. It's one of my favorites, by the way, and it's an old blues tune, and I figured, well, let's play it again and round out the week with I Got Ramblin' on My Mind. I see a long list of people popping up saying that they would like to get things started. A lot of folks have things on their minds, so they've got things rambling on their minds as well. So we'll get started and take our cues from that. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead on PRN.FM. All right. I was trying to find some more background for you on the piano player here. But never mind. We'll keep moving on. Let's not delay this anymore. But really, you should get to know the music. I like playing old music or older music because you find a lot of people who went on to great fame. But that's only recent. You know, they get their fame late in life, but they've been with us for a long time, and people don't, you know, they just don't recognize the music, and they don't know the music. They don't know blues, which is my favorite kind of music. I like all kinds of music, but I like especially the older music. And there's a lot of incredible artistry there that went on to influence today's music. And it's a good thing to learn about the styles and the fact that so much of American music was born out of the blues. And the blues is really a way of saying the misery of people who found a way through music to express themselves and to comfort others. And it's that for me. All right, so let's get started at 888-874-4888. Just get a little tighter with your ideas so that we can accommodate as many people as possible. Harvey from Berkeley, you start us off today.
For you, Chief.
Hey. Hello?
Hi, wonderful Eutrice. How are you today?
Okay, how you doing?
Great. Well, I have, for your amusement, I have a theory of why Trump and his administration are so fossil fuel friendly. And it's because they're Venusians. They're from Venus. It turns out that Venus Venus is considered a sister planet to Earth, and our scientists tell us that Venus once had oceans, and but that they experienced a severe runaway greenhouse effect where the atmosphere was overloaded with carbon dioxide, and so that's what's starting to happen to Earth here. And the temperature on Venus right now, it skyrocketed because of the excessive CO2 in the atmosphere. It went to about 600 degrees, and lead flows like water on Venus, and our scientists tell us that the oceans boiled off, and Venus turned into what we would call a living hell. So the Venusians made the jump to Earth, but Earth was too cold, so they enlisted us to heat up our atmosphere by burning excessive amounts of fossil fuels like coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, and carbonizing our atmosphere. And that's why Trump wants us to turn back to coal and away from renewables. But unfortunately, the Earth is getting too hot for us. And so we're now making the jump to Mars, and we're thinking of terraforming Mars, heating up the Martian atmosphere for us Earthlings. But I say that, you know, we all have to essentially get off this fossil fuel diet we're on and make Earth cool, help cool the planet down for us and our children. And so that's it. That's what I think Trump is. He's a Venusian, and they're here to warm the planet and make it more comfortable for them. But to us, it's an eviction. We're being evicted off the planet Earth to Mars, and terrible process there.
Well, this is the most outrageous explanation I've gotten so far. But it's good for a laugh, and there's a certain amount of irony there that it may not be too far off the truth. Thanks for calling in and getting us started today, Harvey. Appreciate the humor. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. But I'm getting some feedback on your phone, so you might need to talk directly into the speaker.
Yes, is this better?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, listen, I'm going to make this pretty brief. I just would like to ask you this question. What is the job of a congressperson in the United States?
Well, as you know, the United States is one geographic mass, and congressional districts are drawn up to make it possible for people to amplify their representation. So that's you have several layers of government. You have your local layer, like a city council, say, a body of that type, which it gets even smaller in terms of geographic region and representation. So you have that. You have the state level, which would be for the the state assembly or the state senate, and that goes according to the map that is created to maximize representation. All of these things are said at all levels to maximize representation. And they are accountable at the state level through the state assembly and the state senate. And then
okay,
you have
so you would say
the federal level. I will say this is where the question comes in, where the United States is broken out into congressional districts. And of course, for that, you would be running for the U.S. Senate or the U.S. House of Representatives.
So you would say that one of the jobs of the Congress member is to write bills to improve the quality of life of American citizens on a what one would say a collective, right?
Well, it's not just. It is a comprehensive responsibility, not just to improve the quality of life, but to respond to or to be part of the political voice of people living within a congressional district.
Okay, so this is what I'm really trying to get at. Now, we have a situation to where as everyone praises, a.k.a. someone like Maxine Waters, and everyone talks about and praises someone like Adam Clayton Powell Jr., right? Now,
yes.
If you study both of those individuals, they've both been in Congress for a long period of time. Adam Clayton Powell was someone who brought into legislation a great deal of bills to try and improve the condition of the country and its people. Maxine Waters, who's probably been in Congress for as long as Adam Clayton Powell has been in, and I would say if she's brung forward 10 bills, then I would be saying a lot. But what my real premise is this, that the CBC is one of the most wastefulest organizations for black people that there's ever been on the planet. They're worse than the NAACP, the Urban League, and the rest of them. And I'll say why I say this, and just get me. We have a situation in this country now to where as they're talking about repealing Obamacare. It's quite clear that they're having a great deal of difficulty to repeal it. Now, over these last 8 years, there's been a systemic attack constantly against Obamacare. Now, you would think that the CBC, who are individuals who are major supporters of Obamacare, would have worked in those 8 years knowing the difficulty that it would be to repeal Obamacare, to put forward some sort of agenda when this went into play to make the bill not only better, but to showcase it as the type of evilness that is at front by the Republican Party, because they are supposedly have access to all of the finest minds in America that are supposedly black, because they the CBC. So it just goes to show that if they was really about helping the American people over these last 8 or 9 years, they would have collectively came together with our finest minds to put forward a plan that would fight back against the repeal of Obamacare and make Obamacare better. But nobody wants to articulate that, and nobody wants to talk about that, because nobody wants to criticize that useful office. And that's the tragedy of America, that we as minorities allow people like the CBC to get away with doing nothing to help and improve not only minorities, but this country.
Well, you make several good points, but I would say that you also looked at it from a one-dimensional way. And these kinds of things in politics are not at all one-dimensional. If it were one-dimensional, then life would be a lot easier, but it's not. You have several different groups of people, and then you have several groups of people who should be involved, and then you have several groups of people who are involved but on the negative side. So it is not a one-way street. It's got several different pathways, each trying to accomplish something counter to what other groups are doing, and several groups who are trying to support the main agenda. For example, you did not talk about Barack Obama himself. Barack Obama came up with this idea, and it was open to attack from the very beginning. From the very beginning, it was weak and overexposed to anyone who would seize upon it and had the backing to overturn it. It was weak and overexposed because it was written by Hillary Clinton, who met in secret with insurance people and the moneyed people in healthcare, and they put together a bill that the insurance industry wanted, and that the people allied with them, the industry, the healthcare industry, they were the ones who authored Obamacare. She met in secret for more than a year with these people, with the knowledge and support of Barack Obama. He did not really get into this. It's Hillary. And when they reached a point where they felt that all of the political interests were addressed and their needs were met, then they brought it to Congress, but not even in an open way. You see, so it started out as a crooked deal. It started out, it was born in the crucible of corruption. Everybody could readily concede that the country needed back then, and still does need now, a sensible approach that would take care of and consider the needs of the people and put together a plan that would accomplish that. It wouldn't be perfect, but at least the thrust of the legislation was about satisfying the healthcare needs of the people. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and their friends saw this as a great way to make money. Obama was not in this. They said, you president, get out of the room. This is an adult conversation that we're having here. She was allowed, Hillary Clinton was allowed, without objection from anywhere, to, in effect, assign herself a cabinet-level position. Nobody elected her. She did not have to go before Congress and answer questions and be vetted and all this kind of stuff. She's married to the boss. In fact, she is the boss. He is married to her. There was so much money on the table here. And you know the Clintons, if there's anything they like more than money, it's more money. And so she was allowed illegally to function as, in effect, the in charge of health and human services. She knows where the money is. The insurance people know where the money is. And it is not patient-centered. They came up with a kind of a, I don't know what you call it, but it was bad. And it did not prioritize the needs of people who were sick from the minute it came out. And that's a whole other story. This bill was passed, given to Barack Obama, and it said, okay, now it's ready, get it passed. In the dead of night, nobody discussed this in Congress. This was not done in a constitutional and procedural way. These are crooks. coming up with plans, and the plans were so convoluted that they were more than 6 feet high. You tell me that. 6 feet from the floor. That's how much stuff they put in there, most of which has nothing to do with patient care. And then they gave it to Barack Obama. They said, here's your healthcare plan. Now get it passed. Quick, quick, quick. He called a meeting in the dead of night. And I think the legislators had less than an hour to review this newly authored plan. And that's how it was passed. So from the beginning, the task was to shut it down until people can read it, until it could be debated, until specific constituencies could review it, like doctors and nurses and so forth, in the open. So when you attack Obamacare, and people are correct, although they're missing some very major points, understand that it was passed with Barack Obama's enthusiastic support of it, because on the end of it, that was the deal. We're going to call it Barack Obama's whatever it is, put his name on it somehow, and it would get an easier time, both in the sense of the public endorsing something they don't know about. We don't know what's in that bill. And now the Republicans are saying they're opposing it. Well, they should have opposed it from the start. The Democrats should have opposed this from the start. This is the height of corruption, I'm telling you. And you can put this right in front of Hillary Clinton's seat at the table. That's what she was there for. And even now, you're not hearing any discussion about how this bill came about. It never was voted on in Congress. It was, quote, passed in the dead of night when most people have gone home. But they warned, they gave a heads up to the Democrats to stick around, because chances are we're going to bring this bill probably after midnight. So there will be a vote called. And they did exactly that. So we, the people, are suffering because of the corruption of the Democrats, and specifically Hillary Clinton, and specifically Barack Obama. The thought was, well, we'll put this piece of crap, we put his name on it, and we won't have too much of a rough time. People would love the idea, and you write some propaganda behind that saying, well, the black president is just trying to do for poor people, and they all accepted it. Ask around who actually read this bill, and I'll tell you, if any hand goes up, I'll tell them flat out, you're lying. You cannot have read a bill that's more than 6 feet tall. And almost all of that more than 6 feet tall is written by lawyers to protect their clients' interests, those clients being insurance companies and the medical industry and hospitals and so forth. You see? So we have to phrase this whole thing differently. This is massive corruption. Speaking of which, I'll get back to that next week. some very serious things are happening with respect to the Clintons. Now, we'll get back to that. But you see, that's how it happened. And it is now advantageous to the Republicans to attack it. But then it was as if Obama was asking for it when under his name he put this piece of crap forward so that the insurance companies could get what they want and the healthcare industry could get what it wants. Patients are not going to get what they need. You get me? Jay, it's a long answer, I know, but it is really the thing that is wrong with this bill and why it should be killed.
Yeah, but the thing is, and this is what I'm saying, the CBC should be in the position to help lead the charge to replace the bill if they were really, really doing their job, knowing that the others are not going to do it. This is what leadership is.
No, the role of the leadership of the CBC in this particular situation is to go along. All of the black legislators have been given marching orders by Mrs. Clinton.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying they are of no value. I understand everything that you're saying, but one would hope that they would, at some point in time, do the right thing, but it's quite obvious from your answer in a nutshell that none of them are going to do the right thing for the interests of the people. That's what it really boils down to. But we are on the same page. Have a good day, my sister.
All right. Thank you for calling. Leonia of Michigan, you're on the air.
I had a couple of things right quick. First, in terms of that Obamacare thing, I just learned yesterday, according to this one doctor, Dr. Scott Whitaker on YouTube, he says that the medical records of people go directly to the government under Obamacare. That was an interesting idea. I had no idea. I haven't been able to verify it, but he insists that that's true. It's in the, I guess, in that 6-foot-high paper mountain of Obamacare. It's written in there that medical records for people go to the government under that bill, under Obamacare. That's one thing. The other thing is I wanted to offer a little clarity about the book that I asked you about this past Wednesday, that book dealing with Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
The name of the book is Thomas Jefferson, An Intimate History. And the author's name is Fawn M. Brody versus Jane Brody.
Oh, I said Jane Brody. Sorry. I'm
no
glad you followed through, and it's very helpful that you did, because I deem it to be one of the best books you will ever read about Thomas Jefferson.
Wow. And shall I spell her name? Brody is B-R-O-D-I-E, and it's Fawn. F-A-W-N, rhymes with dawn, Fawn M. Brody. Yes, I have put it on my reading list. And the last thing I wanted to offer was, and this is totally separate, because I think, Wednesday when I called in, I was talking about some of the things that Neely Fuller offers in terms of the way to spend our time and energy under the system of white supremacy as long as it exists. And, of course, it needs to be eliminated and replaced by a system of justice. But Dr. Francis Kress Welsing made a quote that I think holds true. And this is the part when it comes to spending time with sex or spending time engaged in sex. She said that, and I'm paraphrasing, she says that when you play with sex, the joke is on the children. And I believe that that holds a whole lot of water, unfortunately.
Well, explain, because I'm trying to connect what I see as the dots here, but they're not connecting.
Okay.
So maybe you could make it a little clearer for people like me. I'm not getting it.
Okay, well, last Wednesday I had offered four items that Neely Fuller suggests. As long as white supremacy exists, use all of your time and energy to do the following. And do not willfully make or maintain contact with other persons except for the following purposes. One, producing, building, repairing, improving, and or cleaning those things that have a constructive value and using them for constructive purposes only. Two, studying, writing, asking questions, and or exchanging views with others about all aspects of how to eliminate racism and how to produce justice in all areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, counter-war. Three, eating and sleeping correctly and only as necessary. Four, engaging in sexual intercourse no more than 2 times every 7 days and using a minimum amount of time and resources in association with such engagements. Now, when I called in Wednesday and mentioned those four items, you had said something about people may be a little bothered by the sex thing or regulation, what have you, but whatever. But I meant to add that Dr. Francis Kress Welsing said that when you play around with sex, the joke is on the children. And that's the context.
I would take the suggestion to mean that in an oppressive situation, which I consider the United States is in a very oppressive situation in many ways, even a thing like procreation has to be carefully measured, carefully thought
ma'am.
About bringing children into this world, because to some it would be a great joy to say, you know, we've added somebody to the family. But when you, I haven't seen a study of this yet, but what is the typical lifespan of a child born today? What is the average lifetime of such a child? What kind of schools would these children be going to? What is the forecast, the future for a child born today? You know, in Trinidad, where I come from, I was born and raised and lived in a very interesting environment. Mm-hmm. It used to be that you may be walking around and whatnot, and you're hearing a lot of crying. And, of course, you want to know what's going on. So, and then you find out they're holding a mourning service, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, because a child has been born.
Oh, my.
Yes. And these are the Madrasi Indians. They would hold a ceremony in which the village, their village would hold a mourning ceremony because a child has been born into a very unjust world.
Oh,
and
my.
This child, which would, it would normally be a source of joy, but
yes.
they mourn for the child because the child is going to be facing so much hardship in life. And then the exact opposite, when a person dies, it's a lot of celebration. And they say that the person has finished the journey and has lived the lifespan of that journey very well. It's a very interesting take on life. But
yes, ma'am.
In terms of what you raise here, I think that might be the application of the thinking process to say, considering that you have so many hurdles ahead of you as a black child born in it, into this world, it should cause people to think again about How are you going to raise a child facing so many obstacles in life? I mean, it's not just to make paranoid people, but it is to remind folks that the oppression is not going to stop. And you have to change some things in your life in order to assist, you know, the perseverance and the ability of a child to achieve things. And that's what we talked about a couple of months ago. Focus less on the system. It's doing exactly what it needs to do or what it sees that it has to do to maintain the status quo. It is we who must change. The people affected, they've got to change. Now, some of the things that you discussed here today may sound a little off the wall, and that's because we've never thought about it. So it's strange and foreign information. But we have to consider everything. If it is a body of information that would help us to prepare for the reality that we're living in now and for the next few years, we will have to change our ways of thinking. That's what I stress in all the programs I do. You got to change your way of thinking.
Yes, thought, speech, and action. Yes.
Yes, you have to do it. Because it's not going to be done for you, and if it is done for you, it is not going to be good for you.
Get,
you know, listen to everything. Evaluate everything.
Yes.
But do so with the idea that this is your self-protection. There are people who know things that may sound funny. Until you follow through with the way they came to their conclusions and so forth, and then you go, ah, I see that. I see where they were going with that. And I could use some of that right now to alter my mind. It is always good to talk with you. You certainly put on the table very, very interesting ideas. And I thank you for correcting me on, I always say Jane Brody. I don't know why.
Yeah, there is a Jane Brody, but she writes stuff on nutrition. But
I know Jane Brody.
Yeah.
And she spells her name B-R-O-D-Y. And it is Jane. But I was wrong on but you see, this is why it's so great to be in the company of people like you. I got her name wrong. That's very bad. You know, we should never do that. We have the opportunity to confirm everything. But hey.
No problem. But one quick question. What was the name of that group in Trinidad again that does the mourning when the child is born? How do you spell that? That's with the M you said?
Madrasi. They are from India, and many Indians came to Trinidad. But you'd find this ritual in the deep, deep country, where they still hold to the old ways.
Well, I appreciate you.
You know the fabric, Madras cotton.
I think I've heard that term. Yes.
It's a lightweight cotton in order to, you know, get rid of all that perspiration in such a hot environment. And they were indentured servants when they came to Trinidad. And they made their own cloth and so forth. So we get the word Madrasi from that part of India where they came from that produced these light cloths that were both helpful in dissipating all that heat, and also it was very cheap. And now Madras cotton is a big deal. You can't afford it. So that's the way of the world. But I don't know how many people still follow through with that ritual. It would be good to know. I'm going to research it myself. But yeah, there's a lot of wailing when a child is born. And the wailing is to help the child not wail. You know, they do the wailing for the child, and infliction of all this pain that the child through life will experience, the community does it instead. You know, they do it ahead of time so the child wouldn't have to wail as much. It wouldn't have to suffer as much. But when there's a death, there's great celebration that the cycle that you were assigned has come to an end. You did a good job. And you're going to another life. You're going to another life in a higher station in life.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Reginald. Is Reginald there?
Yes, Reginald is right here.
How are you, Reginald?
I'm great. I'm great, Yatrice. I'm always so grateful to hear your voice and
the people
that call in. And today I want to speak about what's on my mind, and it's very, very heavy. It's really weighing it down. But starting July 10th, it's coming Monday, I got about 6 or 7 young 14-year-old boys coming to my house to start a summer camp, and plans of hopefully reopening up to UAM's field retreat camp that we did for like about 18 years. Upstate New York. This camp right here, like I said, will be done in my house in Elmont, New York, July 10th through July 17th. It's for boys only from 10 to 15 years of age. Anyone interested can call my home number, which is 685-6522, 917-685-6522. We have room for about 5 more boys. This is the beginning of a sleepaway summer camp modeled after Freedom Retreat for boys and girls. Plans are in place to bring it back next summer, and the first step starts now. The majority of these young boys attending this camp will be family members. And some of the activities that we will be doing, I just pick out a few of them, would be like on that fourth day, we visit Wall Street Stock Exchange, Statue of Liberty, and the African Burial Ground. On the fifth day, we visit Schoenberg Center in Harlem and a sit-down at the feet of knowledge of Dr. Leonard Jeffries, attorney at Orton Maddox, and Dr. Cola Clark. I wish that you was in New York and not Florida so we could sit down at your feet. But these young boys are...
You know, I have a very, very emotional attachment to this program. As far as I know, it is the only program, a sleepaway program, for black boys and girls, and they have a pretty comprehensive curriculum that they follow. And I was one of the people on the curriculum. It's going to be a little tough for me to join you this year.
Well, this right here is just a model of that. It's called Summer Youth Camp, and we are planning on getting it started next year. So next year, we'll find time to get you back to that camp. And actually, when they get here, they will be required to every day listen to your show. And I know I can't keep their attention maybe for the whole hour, but they have to take notes. And on Friday, one or two of them are going to call your show, and they're going to give their ideas. Okay, so I just want to warn your audience, these young 14, 15-year-olds, and by the way, they're coming from Ohio, Georgia, Massachusetts, and Delaware. And they are little scholars. They are honor students in their school. So these are some nice little boys. But I do got some kids right here in the neighborhood that will be joining us. And it's just a matter of liking and saying, you know, instead of discussing the problems, we discuss the solutions and try to get our young children and stay on the right path to success. And I can leave with the ones that went to the Freedom Retreat for boys and girls for 18 years, with you being on the curriculum,
yes,
all of them went on to success in life. So it's up to us adults, you know, to help our children. And let me not leave without saying that many people donated to this camp and to make it possible, right, to GoFundMe. And it reminds me of something that I was wanting to start with you, and this has shown me that, you know, it can work. So this is, anyone interested in helping out, it's GoFundMe.com. And it's 3UAC5IG. I repeat, 3UAC5IG. And so it's coming Friday. You will hear from these little boys, and hopefully they have some good to say to you all. Thank you for letting me share.
I am so glad that you persevered, especially I know the camp and the organization suffered a really devastating blow with the death of Leola Maddox. So it's great to hear that it's revived and it continues, and it will continue doing the good things that it started doing almost two decades ago.
Correct.
I was very happy to be part of that, and the kids were just the best. They were so good, right. And so many volunteers. Who?
That's right.
I mean, they volunteered for security. They volunteered for transport. Everything taken care
That's
of,
right.
And the parents were very pleased. I know with, you know, the accomplishment over the summer. For right. these young women and men now. So I'm happy to hear the good news.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello? Hello, Willie, you're on the air.
Hi, my sister.
How you doing? Not hearing so well. Are you there? Okay. We're having a delayed connection going on there, but we'll get to it as soon as we can. Hello, Willie. Are you there? No, not there. Jay from Georgia, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I heard you mention a number of times about Hillary Clinton's authoring Obamacare originally. Excuse me. I'm just curious to know your sources, because so I would like to look this information up myself, because you give a lot of information. I'd just like to look up. If
I have my sources, and they're personal, but it is widely known. It was it has been covered. And she has been pointed out in the media consistently as playing this role. And the reasons that these meetings were held in secret was that she was not supposed to be seen as being overtly involved. But this was, in fact, her project. So what you can do is you can go and look at Hillary Clinton and Obamacare.
Okay.
And it begin there. This isn't secret stuff, as you know, in the sense that we are talking. It's been widely discussed. It's been widely written about.
Right. Well, the reason I'm asking, because most people will still defend both of them, almost to the death. You know, if you tell them information like what you said, you know, they say, oh, no, you know, Obama's a great guy, and you're jealous of him because he's such a great guy, and Hillary's a nice, you know, the whole thing. So I thought I would find something, if I could find something in writing, you know,
yes.
I could point to.
You could just point, you just do Hillary Clinton, Obamacare.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hi, Willie, are you back with us? Well, we have Yasu from Tokyo. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Didn't think I'd be on so late.
Hello.
Hello. Is there a delay?
Yes, you're on the air. But you, I think you might need to talk directly into your phone mouthpiece, because we're getting, it sounds a little bit like an echo.
Sorry, it must be because I'm using Skype from Japan. Not always the best.
Well, right. Continue. We'll muddle through.
Well, I guess two very quick points. Good people like Gary, you know, mentioned about preventive well-being and health care. Like people say, health care is a right and so forth, but I think it would serve everyone better if the emphasis on well-being, like health maintenance, wellness care, is the right, and the fallback would be medical care. But it seems like the focus is misplaced. I mean, of course, the focus is where it is. It's because that's where the money and power is, so I understand. But anyway, that's just an item for thought. And another is, you know, North Korea right next door doing crazy stuff, and with the president of chaos and his military advisors just doing their thing, seems we're heading towards a greater crisis point that we have not witnessed thus far, despite all the efforts of previous administrations. So, but even though North Korea, from a human rights perspective, is a repugnant country, like similar to how the Soviet Union fell, as Dmitry Orlov and other people would say, that in the end, the Soviet Union collapsed because nobody was really left to defend it anymore after so many decades, that everybody knew it was so corrupt and it wasn't really helping anybody, from the police force to the secret police to politicians. North Korea could do so putting sanctions on a country that's already starving and has the only resources to put into the military is not going to yield anything. Probably best served if you just treat it like a normal nation in a way, just like a crazy cousin or uncle or, you know, the cat lady next door. Just leave him alone, and then the things will eventually probably take care of itself. And that's what North Korea essentially is saying, is don't do this, like military drills next door. If you don't do this, we're not going to shoot more missiles. But then the U.S. goes ahead to do military drills with South Korea, and then the missile comes. It just seems counterproductive at this point, no matter what. And ultimately, there are so many countries with nuclear weapons, but we're not really fussing over it, except a country like North Korea or Iran, which hasn't invaded anybody in centuries. But anyway, you know, just perception, but it makes me wonder why North Korea is just so important, because it's never really been important ever since the war ended. But anyway, you know, there's a diplomatic solution is what I'm getting at. Anyway,
yes.
So those are my two quick points, and because the connection is not good, I'm not going to try to go to anything else. Just always appreciate your insights, and, you know, what the police do to your people in the United States, if that happens in Japan, they get the death sentence, no question and no doubt about it. It's just insane from what I'm perceiving from here. There seems to be a lack of a system of effective justice or law enforcement. And, you know, when you don't have any effective law enforcement, then you're going to just have vigilantes and chaos unless the community organizes to make sure things are in order. But it, anyway, sorry, I didn't go too further. Let another person speak in the last few minutes. Thank you for your attention and time.
Thank you so much for calling in and participating. I really appreciate it. We have a couple of minutes, and David, you will get those couple of minutes, but they're not going to be more than a couple.
What really I think is important, I'm going to try to make laser, and I think it's important for most people to get the takeaway message, and many people understand this already. But most people need to get to the point where they understand that these legislative people, let's start with the Congress, the 435 and the 100-535, they do not work for you, and they have no interest in really benefiting the mass of people that live here. They work for the oligarchy, the ruling class, and people have to get that notion in their head. So don't be thinking they're going to function to benefit the people. They are in the pockets of the corporations, and most people have to understand it. The other thing I think it's important for people to get is that this idea of this term of critical thinking, and, you know, you're supposed to go to school and learn how to be a critical thinker, that is total nonsense, because those who rule, why would those who rule want you to be critical thinker, be a critical thinker, and be able to do this to benefit the people? They want you to go along with the okey-doke, with the program. So all this, that's propaganda. And, you know, people have to get that. You have to really search and research to find out what's going on, because you're not going to find it from the schools, the media, and the way that people get in this information into their heads. Those who rule don't want you to have it, because this whole place functions for the benefit of the oligarchs that run the place, and you have to understand it. Even though you have your representative, your senator and whatnot, look at where they get the money from so that they can run. So that's what you have to do. So the CBC, Congressional Black Caucus, those people, most of them are just getting in. They want a part of the action. So don't expect anything of them either. So, you know, that is what I've been thinking of as we talk today. And I think that this should be a redundant program where you keep driving it into people's heads that the way the thing is set up today does not benefit the people.
So absolutely. Well, we've come to the end of the program, and I want to thank you, David, and everyone else who called in and contributed so meaningfully to our discussion today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. It's a good weekend for you to just relax and surround yourselves with good energy from people who mean you well, or lace up with your sneakers and run like hell away from people who don't. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other Monday. Bye-bye. I've done me wrong.